When the American Folk Art Museum's exhibit of Martin Ramirez's drawings opened earlier this year, Roberta Smith of the New York Times called Mr. Ramirez simply one of the greatest artists of the 20th century. But the Mexican immigrant who spent the last three decades of his life in California mental hospitals is hardly a household name. The curator of the show, Brooke Davis Anderson, is here to tell us the remarkable story behind the show. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
So who was Martin Ramirez? I know he's born in Jalisco, Mexico, 1895, mm-hmm. but everything else seems to be a bit mysterious.
It has been mysterious for the 50 years that we've known of his artwork. But what's been fascinating about our project is that we're unveiling a lot of new research, particularly about his biography, but also about his art. Ramirez, I think his story is typical of many immigrants who come to the United States. He crossed our border in 1925 at the age of 30 in order to find work here so he could send money home to his wife and his children.
He's also escaping turmoil in Mexico at the time.
Yeah, it was during the Cristero Rebellion, which greatly affected his family, and unfortunately his family lost their land in that rebellion.
Do we know if he'd had any art training or whether he was had even made art before he came here?
There's no family recollections of any art making by Ramirez when he was in Mexico. It seems that the first time he took pen to paper was most likely when he was sending letters home with money enclosed. He would draw horse and riders in the margins of those letters.
How did he wind up in a mental hospital?
Well, you know, Leonard, he was arrested by the California police in 1931 for what was written as erratic behavior. He was placed in a jail and had a doctor diagnose him as manic depressive, and that seemed to be enough to put him in the asylum.
They also thought he was a mute because he didn't speak English, and and they weren't speaking to him in Spanish?
Well, you know, we all thought Ramirez was mute until the unveiling of this exhibition and the research. That came a little bit later when he was confined to DeWitt State Hospital in the 40s. And in fact, the muteness we now can solidly say is just a myth. It's one of those myths that is so important to the art world when it comes to outsider art.
Well, what about his mental illness? You kind of hedged your bet there. Do we know whether he was really mentally ill?
We don't. And I think that all of the errors that we now know related to his story and the facts that we found out because of the work of Victor Espinoza and Kristen Espinoza, I think it demands that we also reexamine his mental abilities.
What about the way we look at outsider art? There's a lot more romance to somebody who's schizophrenic The first show he ever had was called Art of a Schizophrene, and then the headlines in newspapers were things like Drawings of Insane Artists Exhibited. That adds a certain specialness to it of, wow, this crazy guy makes this incredible art.
I know. It's interesting. We talk a lot in the museum with our public at how Ramirez is like the new African art. He's the new exotic. And I think that outsider artists have played that role for many, many decades. But this project is trying to give him back his humanity.
And there are some people who don't really even want him to be called an outsider artist because his work is so sophisticated. Can you tell us what makes it special? Why some people feel that he is one of the great artists of the 20th century?
I think everyone will quickly tell you that it has everything to do with the scale of his drawings, which are often taller than 10 feet in length. And then they'll go to the line. His line is so elegant and so understated and voluptuous and sensuous, all depicting memories of his experiences in Mexico and the United States, landscapes of both of those places, the Madonnas of his Mexican youth, the horse and rider of the Hollywood Western and also of the Cristero Rebellion. But it's that line that just captivates.
How was he able to make drawings that were 10 feet long? It's hard to get paper that big.
It is, and he built his own paper support. So he was recycling paper from the environment in the hospital, putting it together with his own adhesive of his saliva, bread and mashed potato. He was collecting the crayons and pencils that were discarded in the hospital environment. And of course, there was no art therapy program at that time, so he was doing this on his own, on the floor of the ward where he lived with 70 other men.
And do we know what they thought of what he was doing?
Well, we do now, because interestingly, we've uncovered the fact that Wayne Thiebaud, the famous artist from California, went to DeWitt State Hospital to watch Ramirez draw when he was a young student at Sacramento State College. And Wayne Thiebaud attended DeWitt State Hospital with several other classmates. So Ramirez had an audience, which is just a very enlightening thing to come upon at this stage of the game.
Now, paper that's been glued together with saliva and starch doesn't usually stay together. Is there a major problem with restoration with his work?
Well, no more major than a Rothko or other work that we hear about lately. The work has been conserved by many of the dealers who are handling this material over the last 50 years. But it is delicate, but by no means, I suspect we'll have these drawings for a long time.
Now, his work came to the attention of the art world through a man named Tarmo Pasto, a professor at Sacramento State University. He did think that Ramirez was mentally ill.
Well, he did, and then he didn't. He also came towards the end of his life, he started to question if Ramirez was in fact schizophrenic. And he gave a lecture in Mexico City in the 1970s where Pasto started to question Ramirez's state of mind.
When those works were exhibited in shows like Art of a Schizophrene, how were they received? Did people think that this was a special artist?
What's so exciting is that right from the get-go, that first exhibition in 1951, any critic who saw Ramirez's work saw its beauty, its awesomeness, and were captivated by it without question.
Well, you would think that he would have had a show in New York before now as a result of that.
We're really glad to be doing it now. You would have thought.
What role did Jim Nutt, the artist and the art dealer Phyllis Kind, play in this? I can see where Jim Nutt would find this very exciting, because his work is often described as surreal and funky, and he probably would have seen Ramirez as a kindred spirit.
Yeah, I think Jim does, and many of the Chicago imagists do relate to self-taught artists and their work.
Like Roger Brown, whose work looks very much like this.
Exactly, and Jim Nutt's wife, Gladys Nilsson, also. Jim is very responsible for saving the work from the 1970s on. Jim Nutt, with his wife, Gladys Nilsson, and Phyllis Kind, acquired the body of work from Tarmo Pasto, and that is at that moment when the conservation of the artwork began.
And what is your feeling about it? Is, because he's self-taught, does this automatically have to be called folk art, or do you think that this is more sophisticated and should just be called art?
Well, of course, we could have a whole program on folk art that is sophisticated, but I...
And there are other self-taught artists,
right,
Van Gogh, for example.
Right. I consider Ramirez one of the masters of self-taught artists of our time, and one of the greatest artists within that canon of self-taught art.
Where did the pieces in the exhibit come from?
Oh, we borrowed work. There are almost 100 drawings in the exhibition, and we lent from private and public collections all over the world.
And some of them are from the Guggenheim Museum. Mm-hmm. How did they come to be at the Guggenheim?
Well, that's a great story. Dr. Tarmo Pasto mailed 10 drawings in a poster tube to James Johnson Sweeney, one of the directors of the Guggenheim in the 1950s. And he sent it to the Guggenheim with the proposal of an exhibition looking at creative genius and mental illness. That project never came to be at the Guggenheim, but we now know that Pasto was sending packages of drawings to various museums to promote this idea.
I'm assuming some of them just threw the stuff out. The Guggenheim,
oh, you're breaking my heart.
The Guggenheim at least put them in a drawer, but they weren't found until 10 years ago.
Yeah, and it certainly talks about the value of this material and the value of self-taught artists and their work. But the Guggenheim did find the work in 1997 and then added it to its collection and conserved the work and framed the work and has it ready for exhibitions.
Did he have a lot of fans among private collectors? Is he shown through dealers like other artists?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, his work really hit the marketplace in the 1970s, and it's gone through that typical cycle of distribution from the dealer community into the collecting community. It's even been in the auction communities, and now, of course, you'll find it in secondary and tertiary markets as well.
There's a beautiful catalog that's published by Markhand Books, and it's dedicated to the Ramirez family.
Yeah.
Have any of them come to see the show?
Yes, that's been personally a very satisfying aspect of the exhibition. The family was located and sort of rediscovered by Victor and Kristen Espinoza in 2001. They're about 50 descendants of Martin Ramirez. They live in both Mexico and Los Angeles, and 12 members of the family came for our opening.
He seemed to have been a little paranoid about returning to Mexico, and that may have been one of the reasons that people thought that he had serious mental problems. He was afraid that if he went back, his wife had joined the enemy in the fight between the Federales and the group that he would have supported.
That's right. It was a classic family misunderstanding. Martin Ramirez mistakenly thought that his wife had gone to the other side and was fighting on the government's side against the church and the freedom fighters in the Jalisco region of Mexico. And he really wrote her off, apparently, from that point forward. So when a nephew came to visit him at DeWitt State Hospital in 1952, he told that nephew that he had no interest in returning home. That visit with the nephews also revealed something else that we didn't know until now. The first asylum where Ramirez lived in California mailed home about a dozen drawings to his family in Mexico in the 1930s. And the family held on to those drawings for about two decades. When they found out that Ramirez lived in the tuberculosis ward, they were fearful that the drawings were infected and they burnt them.
So do we have any work from the early years? Do we have any sense of him as an artist whose style developed?
Yeah, what's so fascinating about this exhibition is we now know that this is really his mid to late work. So there's a whole body of early work that nobody's ever seen. And our PR person is blanketing the local papers in the Stockton, California area so that perhaps we'll find a drawing in an attic, a garage, a cellar from an old doctor or nurse who might have worked at Stockton State Hospital in the 30s. I'm crossing my fingers.
Meanwhile, the show has been so well received. It's been extended.
It has. We've had great audience response, and so the museum just this week decided to extend the show through May 13th, Mother's Day.
And then will it be traveling to other venues?
Yes, it's going to travel to the Milwaukee Art Museum in Wisconsin this fall, opening October 6th and being on view through January 6th, 2008.
But you would have thought it would also go to California, where he lived out most of the last years of his life.
The American Folk Art Museum would love this show to go to California.
If you are interested in what we've been discussing, you can actually get some sense of what Martin Ramirez's work is like because we have posted some of them. We've provided a slideshow on our website. And, of course, you can see the complete exhibit at the American Folk Art Museum, which is located at
45 West 53rd between 5th and 6th and just next to MoMA.
Right down the block from the Museum of Modern Art, which I think probably should have one or two examples of Martin Ramirez's work.
I agree. I love that idea.
Meanwhile, I want to thank you so much, Brooke Davis Anderson, the curator of the Martin Ramirez Show of Drawings at the American Folk Art Museum.
It's been a real pleasure
talking with you.
Same here.
We'll be right back.